Coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast, the team was back on the practice squad on Wednesday. I'll have some updated roster news for you. Guys coming onto the COVID-19 reserve list, guys coming off of the COVID-19 reserve list. All that will be updated. Plus, you know it's Thursday. So what does that mean? Crossover Thursday. Host of the Locked On Colts show, Evan Siddery, he's going to join the show to break down the Raiders' Week 17 opponent. All that and more coming up on today's edition of the Locked On Raiders podcast for Thursday, December 30th, 2021.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Just Raiders. Win. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Just win. Your team Just every win. Day.
Just win.
You're a win as a Raider. Pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won. And won.
And welcome into today's edition of the show. And Raider Nation, I appreciate you and thank you so much for making the Locked On Raiders podcast your first listen each and every day. And remember, you can find it free and available on all platforms, as many of you do. Again, I cannot thank you enough for the success that we've had here on the show in 2021 and looking forward to continued success in 2022. Now, let's just go ahead and jump right into the show. Excited because it is Crossover Thursday. You'll get that in segment two and segment number three. But right now, I got to give you the news and notes. Raiders made a bunch of roster moves as of Wednesday. They signed free agent linebacker Justin Marsh Lillard, linebacker Kyle Wilbur. Both of those guys come to the Raiders. As far as Marsh Lillard goes, he was an undrafted free agent with the Kansas City Chiefs back in 2015. He's played in Kansas City, Miami, Seattle, Dallas, Tennessee with the 49ers and the Saints. He's played in 61 games with 5 starts over his career, 29 total tackles, and 3 passes defense. Kyle Wilbur, I know that name you'll remember. He came over from the Cowboys back in 2018. He signed as an undrafted free agent with the Raiders. Spent a lot of time on special teams. That's really who that guy is. He's a special time dude. He's a Rod Marinelli guy. He's a Rich Bisaccia guy. And he's going to be a guy that is going to help out as far as really special teams goes with the silver and black. So those are a couple moves that the Raiders made. Now, they also have some COVID-19 issues going on. They activated guard Jermaine Illuminor, cornerback Brandon Faison, and safety Roderick Teamer. They all came off the reserve COVID-19 list, but they put guys on. Defensive tackle Kendall Vickers and tight end Darren Waller. Two big deals right there, especially Vickers. Darren Waller is a guy that I didn't expect to play on Sunday anyway. I've said it multiple times. I don't expect him to play the rest of the season, but that's just my gut feeling. But now they go on to the COVID-19 list, so who knows when they could be activated. Of course, there's the new rule and the protocols where they can come out in 5 days of isolation, or if they're vaccinated, like I believe both those guys are, they can test and come out a little bit earlier. But it sounds like those guys won't be available this Sunday for the game against the Colts. Also, the Raiders signed linebacker Asmar Bilal to the practice squad, and then also they designated tight end Derek Carrier from return from the reserve injured list, so maybe he plays this week, maybe he plays the final game of the regular season against the Chargers, but they did designate him from return. And then two more COVID-19 moves that they made, but this has to do with the practice squad. Guard Lester Cotton Sr. and guard Jeremiah Patasi, they were put on the reserve COVID-19 list as well. So if you can keep up with all that I just told you, those are the roster moves that happened for the Raiders on Wednesday as they're getting down to the nuts and bolts of the end of the regular season. Of course, the Colts and then the Chargers to close this thing out. Now, you might be wondering, well, Q, why do they need so many linebackers? Why do they have to go out and make a couple moves? Well, remember UNLV's linebacker Javon White, the undrafted free agent that's been with the team for a while, got injured earlier in the preseason against the Rams and was out with a knee injury. Well, the news rolled out early Wednesday morning that linebacker Javon White actually was signing to the Jets active roster. So they signed him off the Raiders practice squad, and now he's in New York with the Jets. And the thing about it is, when you sign a guy off the practice squad, you immediately have to place them onto your active roster. So he's now in New York with the Jets. My guy Vinny Bonsignor, who does In the Huddle following me on Raider Nation Radio 920, he actually reached out to Javon on Wednesday and said, hey, is this news accurate? And he said, yeah, not only is it accurate, I just got finished with practice today. So he was already in New York, already practicing with the Jets. And from everything that Vinny told me, Mike Mayock and company was not happy. They were not happy that Javon White was signed by the Jets, but he's got to look at it from his point of view. He's got to look at it as an opportunity. You know, he's been on the practice squad. He wants to get out there and play. He wants to earn a little bit extra money, get that game check. So the Jets came calling, and he had the decision. He could have said, no, I'll stay here. I don't want to sign with you. Or, no, I'll take the opportunity. Well, Javon White, and I think he was smart, decided to take that opportunity. Now, the bad part about that is he probably would have got some play this upcoming week. There's a good chance he would have got some play. Let's put it like that. with the linebackers that were on the COVID-19 list for the Raiders, there's no guarantee that they're going to be all good to go on Sunday. So he had a good chance of probably getting out there and playing, but maybe he just wanted to make sure he had a chance and he was going to get out there and get on the active roster. So Javon White no longer with the silver and black, and he'll finish out the regular season, at least finish out the regular season with the Jets. And so good luck to him. You know, I hold no ill will to him. I know I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about, man, why would he leave now? Look, you got to take that opportunity when you get the chance. So Javon White's now with the Jets. I did want to real quick go over the Raiders' injury report from Wednesday. It's not as bad as it's been the past few weeks where it's been a laundry list of guys, but I did want to quickly go over it. Quarterback Derek Carr dealing with that rib injury that we saw on Sunday. He was a full participant on Wednesday. That's a really good thing. Tight end Daniel Helm dealing with the knee injury. He was a full participant. Running back Josh Jacobs dealing with ribs. He was a full participant. Tight end Foster Moreau, abdomen, full participant. And tackle Brandon Parker with a knee injury, he also was a full participant. The guys who did not participate, defensive tackle Quentin Jefferson, he had a Veterans Day, so nothing to worry about. And guard Jordan Simmons had a personal day, so he didn't participate either. And the guys that were limited on Wednesday, Divine Diablo, the linebacker, dealing with shoulder and elbow injury, and then defensive tackle Jonathan Hankins, who didn't play on Sunday against the Broncos, dealing with the back injury, he was limited as well. And remember, practice on Wednesday was just a walkthrough, so it was really just kind of an estimated injury report. We'll find out another one later on this afternoon, and then we'll find out one on Friday, and then we'll find out the official one on Sunday, 90 minutes before kickoff, Raiders and Colts. Head coach Rich Bisaccia and also quarterback Derek Carr met with the media on Wednesday. I'm just going to play you a few sound bites from head coach Rich Bisaccia, including this one, his opening statement. And of course, all day Wednesday was really on Raider Nation Radio 920. If you tuned in at all, you heard it was basically a celebration of the life and times of John Madden. So Rich Bisaccia, he opened up his presser talking about the late and great John Madden.
Good afternoon. I'm going to get started with certainly our thoughts and prayers with Coach Madden's family. You know, we lost an icon in the world of football, certainly in the National Football League, but really the world of football has lost an icon. And it's hard to say that you can find another person that has gone through all the genres that he's gone through and been ultra successful like that. I had a chance to meet him when I was a young coach in the NFL in Tampa and came through, and I just had a chance to shake his hand, and it was kind of like my hand disappeared. You know, he was such a big man, and he lit up the room, and he had this way in which he made everyone else in the room feel really good about themselves, and you're actually excited about meeting Coach Madden. And in my conversation with owner Mark yesterday, you know, his comment was, you know, he's a Raider. And so I certainly understand that and have a great understanding of what a Raider is, certainly by the example that Coach Madden left here, along with the entire National Football League. So it's a great loss. And again, our thoughts and prayers with his family.
So there was a nice opening statement, I thought, from Rich Bisaccia talking about John Madden and just talking about what he meant to the Raiders organization and the NFL in general. And then Heidi Fang from the Review Journal, Vegas Nation, she asked him about just biggest takeaways from John Madden as a coach. You know, what did he see and what did he learn and maybe even implement into his coaching style from John Madden?
I think the one thing that always comes to my mind as a young person watching him on the sideline was just his energy and his enthusiasm and his zeal for football. I think for me personally, that's what I would say. Him jumping up and down and his hands. And, you know, I can remember when he did the beer commercials, if I'm correct, he came out of the paper and, you know, he threw his hands through there, and which if you look at him on the sideline, his hands were always in motion. He's nonstop movement. And so for me, I think the zeal he always seemed to have for football. And then I would say his feelings for players. You know, it became very obvious when he got involved with the All Madden team and those things that, you know, his evaluation and his thoughts on players and how that became so popular within the National Football League. And then those guys, you know, playing to be on the All Madden team. It's something everybody wanted to do because he had such an affinity for players and what they brought to the game. So for me, it's a great zeal and his emotions, those sort of things. And I think when they've been playing all the replays, you see all that from him, you know. So we've lost a dear man.
So a nice lengthy answer right there from Rich Bisaccia, who usually doesn't give long answers. But when he started talking about Madden, both of those quotes were pretty lengthy for Rich Bisaccia. So obviously it meant a lot to him, and I could definitely respect that. And there was a lot of love and outpouring for John Madden all day long across the country, not just on Raider Nation Radio 920, but across the country. So I just thought it was great to hear everyone just talk about what the late, great John Madden meant to them. Was it a coach? Was it a broadcaster? Was it a video game? Was it commercials? What was it? You know what I mean? What was it Thanksgiving watching football? What was it that he meant to you? I just thought that that was awesome. Just to see it all over Twitter, hear it all over the radio, see it all over TV. I mean, he really, really had an outpouring across the whole NFL. Like one I haven't seen in a very long time. I thought that was awesome. Now, Rich Bisaccia was asked one question about the team that the Raiders got to play next, the Indianapolis Colts, who we're going to get a real good breakdown of with Evan Sittery from Locked On Colts coming up in segment number two and segment number three. But he was asked how the Raiders defense, who's been playing really well against the run ever since the bye week, how are they going to try to go about slowing down Colts running back Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah, I don't, you know, great question. And again, I just think it's a credit goes to Gus, a credit goes to the defense. And certainly a lot of our identity is up front, you know, on our defensive front, what they've been able to do this year. It's really been all year. And again, I know Gus talks about it. We seem to just keep improving week in and week out. And we've been fortunate for the most part to hang on to those guys. You know, we lost Hankins last week with an aggravated back, and we fully anticipate to having him back. And, you know, Square has stepped in and played well, and Phylon has stepped in and played well inside, and Solomon Thomas has been extremely consistent all year. You know, those big bodies on the inside, and we've done a good job on the edge. We all know about Max's motor and how he's played along with Yannick, and Carl's had a heck of a year, and Klee keeps improving. So it starts up front for us. It's a tall task. Again, it's a team that really concentrates on running the football, time of possession, those things. And we've seen this now, right? This will be the third week in a row we're playing against a really well-coached and a really physical run game. And we'll show up, and we'll be expected to perform and to play well.
So there's Coach Bisaccia talking about the run game of the Colts and Jonathan Taylor, and also the effectiveness that the Raiders have had defensively the last, you know, few weeks against the run, how it's much improved, way better than it was earlier in the season. So that's all I got for you for segment number one of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Coming up in segment number two, part one of my conversation with Evan Sivery. He's the host of Locked On Colts. We'll be talking all things offense. Before I get to that, though, I do want to tell you about betonline.ag, and they've got you covered this holiday season and further into 2022. They have got you because, well, everything is going on, right? Football, basketball, NHL, boxing, UFC, you name it, they've got it. Go to the website right now on your mobile device or your laptop, sign up today, and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All you got to do is use the promo code Locked On. You'll get your bonus. So basically, you put in $1,000, you use that promo code Locked On, all one word, and you'll get $500 on top of that. So that's $1,500 you're playing with instead of just $1,000 that you put in. That's how betonline.ag thanks you for using their service. They're the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Don't wait to take advantage of all the new amazing offers that they have available. Check them out today. betonline.ag. Where the game starts.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we go. Segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast on this crossover Thursday, one of my favorite days of the week, and I know it's a lot of Raider Nation's favorite day of the week as well, as you get an in-depth idea of what the next opponent on the schedule for the Raiders is going to look like, what to expect from that team come Sunday. And so to find out about the Colts, we take a deep dive into the Indianapolis Colts. Evan Sivery, host of the Locked On Colts, he's joining the show to talk all things offense and defense. We're going to start things off here in segment number two, talking offense. So here's part one of my conversation. All right, Evan, let's get this thing cooking, man. It's opportunity now to talk about the Colts. Just what has the season been like? How has the season felt to you from, you know, your point of view covering the Indianapolis Colts? What has this been like so far?
It's been a roller coaster, definitely, Q. I mean, you look at the start of the season, 0-3, and at that point, you look at Colts Twitter and just everyone that's watching the Colts, it's reaching DEFCON levels saying, oh, the Carson Wentz trade isn't going to work out. They need to bench him to save the draft pick. Frank Reich's overthinking things. The defense taking a step back. Jonathan Taylor hasn't had a 100-yard game yet in the first three games. The offensive line is not gelling together. The pass rush, the defense is not consistent right now. But, man, over that stretch of games, I mean, they've won 8 of their last 10 games since then, which really goes to show you exactly what's happened with this team. They just flipped a switch. after their 0-3 start. And in those three losses, Q, they've actually had a double-digit lead in all three of those games, the Ravens, the Titans, and the Buccaneers. So if they wouldn't have choked those games away in the fourth quarter, might be talking about a team that's 11-3 right now instead of 8-6 with the way they're playing. Just one of the hottest teams in the NFL. Their defense is stiffening up at a perfect time. Jonathan Taylor has taken a superstar leap this year. Like you mentioned, in the MVP race alongside Aaron Rodgers, he's on pace to have 2,200 scrimmage yards and 23 touchdowns this year. Just an amazing performance from Jonathan Taylor this season. Carson Wentz, too. If you would have told me before the start of the season he would have a higher QBR than Patrick Mahomes this year, I would have told you right away that trade worked out perfectly for them because he's played exactly how you want him to. He's avoided those situations where he's played hero ball. It's come at the worst times for them in those games against Tampa Bay and Tennessee, for example. But more often than not, Carson Wentz doing exactly what he's told to do. 25 touchdowns, 6 interceptions in 15 games so far this year for the Colts, being very efficient when he throws the ball down the field. And that touchdown he had on Christmas Day against the Arizona Cardinals, that was one of the best throws I've seen in the NFL this year. Just special arm talent that Carson Wentz has. Frank Reich has really dialed him back and brought back the 2019 version of Carson Wentz, which has been an incredible feat for Frank Reich. I mean, I think he's right in the race for Coach of the Year, to be quite honest, alongside with Taylor with MVP. So this team has flipped the switch. I think they're one of the hottest teams in the NFL. And I think on Sunday, it's actually going to be a really good game between these two teams because the Colts and the Raiders stylistically, if everyone's out on the field with the COVID protocols, I think it's going to be a really good game on both sides where it could come down to the last moment because these two teams actually match up very well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it does feel like that a lot of these players that are out right now due to COVID-19 are going to get back. But how concerning is it for you and obviously the Colts with the guys that are out currently, even if they're able to play on Sunday, which it looks like they will be, just without them being able to go through the week of practice and their normal reps because they're still kind of in the isolation process, how big of a concern is that? Or is it because it's, you know, so late in the season, week 17, that it should be a little bit easier to deal with?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both there, to be quite honest. And especially if Carson Wentz, who is unvaccinated, if he can't go on Sunday, if he is still showing symptoms, Sam Ehlinger, the rookie out of Texas, it's definitely a big step down from Carson Wentz to Sam Ehlinger. So if Ehlinger suits up on Sunday, I'm definitely leaning towards the Raiders in that scenario. But I mean, this is maybe a cop-out answer here, Q, but they still have Jonathan Taylor back there. He's perfectly healthy. He's perfectly fine. So, I mean, if Ehlinger suits up on Sunday, John Taylor's going to get 40-plus touches in this game. I mean, he's just an incredible talent to watch. He's one where he could take 180 yards down the field or he can carry two or three guys on his back for two to four extra yards every single time. Never goes down first contact. So, That's the easy way of looking at it with this Colts team is that you have such a special player in the backfield that it kind of makes up for the other warts on your team, which really goes to show just how incredible this guy is. Only in his second year in the NFL.
You know, I'll tell you this. Even if Carson Wentz is in the game, I'd find a way to get the ball to Jonathan Taylor 40 times a game. I mean, the dude is he is an incredible talent, like you mentioned, man. He's going to be fun to watch in the NFL for a very long time. Why was there a stretch of games where it felt like Taylor wasn't being fed the rock?
Yeah, really interesting because you look at his numbers in the first 6 weeks of the season, he only had about 15 touches per game. But ever since then, here's the numbers over the last six or seven games, 21, 32, 16, 32, 29, 27. Those are just Jonathan Taylor's carries over that stretch where the Colts have really caught fire here. And I think it's honestly looking back on it now, I think it's a little bit of two things. I think Frank Reich didn't really know what he had yet in Jonathan Taylor, how special a talent he truly was. I think the second part is they might have been saving Jonathan Taylor to give him that heavy Derrick Henry-esque workload for this final stretch of the season because they knew they're going to have to put him on his back the last 2 months of the season, which could be another valid point there as well. So I think it's a little bit of both there. But you look at the way that the Colts, I think if they would have given Jonathan Taylor this workload in the first 6 weeks of the season, they might have won an extra one or two games in that stretch, and they might have been fighting Kansas City right now for that number one seed in the AFC for home field advantage. So it's just been unlucky breaks here and there. I know Frank Reich, I think he regrets not giving John Taylor the ball more to start this season. But you know, the way he's playing now, it's just truly, truly incredible to watch a guy like this continue to go out there and just simply dominate defenders.
You know, and when he's out there and able to dominate the way he is, I mean, that opens up the rest of the game. That opens everything up for the other wide receivers on the squad, and there's some dynamic wide receivers, obviously, on the Colts. So how much easier when he's cooking does that make Carson Wentz's job or whoever's behind center? I mean, Sam Ehlinger, that's a different story just because he's a rookie, and I know he's had, what, three carries so far this season, and that's about it. You know, that's got to open up the game, though, for Carson Wentz, being able to have a guy like Jonathan Taylor kind of clear things out for everybody else.
Absolutely. I mean, it opens up not only for Carson Wentz, but also Frank Reich, because Frank Reich admitted to the local media about a month or two ago to us that the playbook is fully open for him for the first time since 2018 with Andrew Luck. And I think a lot of it has to do with Jonathan Taylor, but also with Carson Wentz and his strong arm. In 2018, when the Colts went on that run, when they were 1-4 and finished 10-6, very heavy run attack, mixing in the play action with deep shots down the field. That's exactly what the Colts are doing right now with Carson Wentz under center. Just taking those shots when need be, being very efficient, relying on their running back. 2018 was Marlon Mack. Now 2021, it's Jonathan Taylor. I think the balance is there for Frank Reich. It's what he wanted all along, and he's not putting the game in Carson Wentz's hands. So Carson Wentz, when he does have those opportunities, it's more so those quick rhythmic throws, or if it's not, it's those deep shots down the field off play action. You have 8, 9, sometimes 10 guys in the box, and it makes Carson Wentz's job so easy to the point where he can just play pitch and catch with these wide receivers on the outside.
So that was part one of the conversation right there with Evan Sivery, host of Locked On Colts. We're going to flip it over in segment number three, talk some defense, and then I'm going to get an offensive line question in as well. And really, it's so hard to break this down and really have a great crossover edition like we like to do each and every week, because there's so much COVID-19 issues going on around the league, going on with the Raiders, going on with the Colts. So it's hard to get a great idea and a grasp of exactly who's going to be playing. But myself and Evan did the best job we can. So part two of our conversation talking defense and a little O-line is coming up in segment number three.
Your Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Las Vegas Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number three of today's Locked On Raiders podcast, and time for part two of my conversation with Evan Sivery, host of the Locked On Colts. Talked all things offense in segment number two. Now we're going to jump into the defensive side of things. Also going to talk a little bit of offensive line, because again, the offensive line is something that I've been paying attention to with the Colts. At one point earlier this week, all their starting offensive linemen were out either due to injury or COVID-19. Now, that's not the case right now, but like I mentioned in segment number two, it's so hard to get a very good gauge of everyone who's going to be playing, both for the Raiders and the Colts, due to this COVID-19 situations, but we're doing the best that we can. So here's part two of my conversation, jumping into the defensive side of things as far as the Colts go.
Flipping over to the defensive side of things, of course, Darius Leonard is the stud linebacker. I mean, all world. Of course, he was dealing with his COVID issues as well. But again, I'm assuming most of these guys are going to be returning on Sunday and really have a full roster of guys. But led by Leonard, how is this defense shaping up right now? Because it has been really cooking. Even the last couple seasons, this defense has been scary.
Yeah, very opportunistic defense built around speed and length, the way GM Chris Ballard's wanted it all along in this 4-3 Tampa 2 heavy zone defense. Like you mentioned, Darius Leonard has forced 11 turnovers by himself this year, forced fumbles, fumble recoveries, interceptions, whatever you want to name in there. Darius Leonard's done it all for this defense. He is the backbone of this defense. I think it's impressive, too, when he didn't play on Saturday against the Cardinals due to COVID, that EJ Speed, their backup linebacker, stepped right up and got 9 tackles in his first ever start in the NFL. The way that Chris Ballard's built this team on defense, just depth across the board, you have guys behind starters who can come in and play in a pinch and play well. You have DeForest Buckner in the middle of this defense, who is a game wrecker in this 4-3 defense tackle position. Grover Stewart's one of the best run defense tackles in the NFL as well. Quiddy Pay, the rookie edge rusher, coming to his own. Kenny Moore finally got the respect he deserves as a slot corner. He got his first Pro Bowl nod this year. One of the most underrated corners in the NFL. It's unfortunate Julian Blackman is out this year. He got hurt in practice about 2 months ago, blowing out his Achilles, but he's a game wrecker as well. They've really missed him in some games. But outside of that, I mean, you have the true spine of this defense. You have Leonard in the middle. You have Kenny Moore on the outside. You have DeForest Buckner on the inside. Three young stars on your defense. You can just build around that. The way that Chris Ballard's gone around and overhauled this defense when he first arrived in 2017, it truly is remarkable how different this team looks and how they're really feasting off of how they're built. They have 31 turnovers so far this year, tied for the league lead in the NFL, very opportunistic, built around speed. And I mean, on Sunday, it's going to be a tough challenge for this Raiders offense to really find a rhythm to get going against them.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you. I mean, right now, I mean, Darren Waller, he hasn't played in a handful of games, so I'm not assuming that he's going to play on Sunday. So if I take him out of the equation, I'm looking at a run game for the Raiders that got cooking last week against Denver, and I'm looking at a guy like Hunter Renfrow, a guy like Zay Jones, you know, potentially Brian Edwards if he comes back. But, I mean, DeSean Jackson, who's got some speed, he's a 14-year veteran in the league. How does the Colts defense, in your opinion, kind of match up against those guys, and do you see a weak link or an area of the Colts defense that the Raiders may be able to exploit if they have an opportunity?
Yeah, I think one area that might be a little soft is, I would say, I know Rocky Sin and Isaiah Rogers have really proven themselves as far as this year's boundary corners, but Xavier Rhodes has really taken a step back this year after he got re-signed in a one-year deal. to be their top quarterback this year. Rhodes has really been outsnapped a lot over the last month or so this season by Rodgers and Yasin, those two young corners that I just mentioned there. But they can be inconsistent at times. We saw it on Saturday. Isaiah Rodgers got beat down the field a couple times. Rock Yasin has been very good this year, but in some moments he could be inconsistent. And in Xavier Rhodes, if you beat him down the field, there's more often than he's going to allow one or two big plays per game. So whether it be Hunter Renfrow or Bryan Edwards, I could really see a big game from Bryan Edwards on the outside in this game because he's a guy who can take the top off the defense down the field. He can beat you in the middle of the field, almost like Michael Pittman Jr. for the Colts in that same way that Edwards is built. So I really could see a big game from Bryan Edwards if Darren Waller is not out there. If Waller is out there, it gets even tougher because Waller is just a mismatch nightmare, as we all know. So if Waller plays, it's even more difficult. But I could really see an X factor for the Raiders side because I imagine they have Kenny Moore shadowing Hunter Renfrow throughout the game in the slot, wherever he goes. But I could really see Bryan Edwards having a big game, being kind of the X factor, so to say, for this Raiders team.
You know, it should be interesting to see if, you know, Edwards is able to return. Again, he was the COVID-19 guy. He hit the reserve list on Sunday, so I'm assuming he's going to get back again. There's a lot of assumptions going on here, but really we have no idea. You know, we have no idea who's going to play, who's not going to play, but just kind of trying to look at it from all angles. And I know I already started talking about the defense, but I did want to go back to the offensive line real quick because I know a lot of banged up guys, and I know a lot of COVID-19 guys as well, as far as the Colts offensive line, to the point where everybody from their starting offensive line is out or was out. So what's the status right now of the O-line, and how do you think that they square up and match up against the Raiders defensive line, particularly Unique Ngakoue and Max Crosby?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting matchup. Assuming that all these guys are back off the COVID list, Quentin Nelson, Mark Lewinsky, Ryan Kelly also comes back from his personal tragedy that he suffered a couple weeks ago, just an awful situation with Ryan Kelly, where he lost his child during the process. But also, you see those guys get back. Eric Fisher, he's questionable for Sunday after injuring his knee against the Cardinals. But I do think there's a little bit of a soft spot on that left side. Eric Fisher has been, if he's not playing on Sunday, it's probably going to be Julian Davenport. So either way, I think Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue have an edge on the outside. Braden Smith's been a rock at right tackle, so I don't expect much out of him. He should be able to go on Sunday after getting in COVID protocols as well. So we'll have to see on that how much these guys are going to be back. But to be quite honestly, I could easily see Crosby and Ngakoue having one or two moments each where they could really impact this game. Carson Wentz tends to hold onto the ball a long time too. So I could really see a moment where there could be a strip fumble or something along those lines to keep this game close. But this interior of the offensive line, I could really see if Nelson's out there, if Lewinsky's out there, if Kelly's back out there, they're just going to bully Jonathan Taylor in this front four for the Raiders with Taylor, Nelson, Kelly, and Glowinski, because that's where their strength is. It's the interior. And you can just have John Taylor run behind number 56 all night long. So I really see this game kind of being built around playing away from the edges because they have, I think, a mismatch advantage. The Raiders do against this Colts offensive line on the outside. But on the inside, it kind of swings back the other direction completely with the way the interior is built. So I really think we're going to see a lot of quick passes from Carson Wentz and a lot of inside runs to counteract that.
So there it was, Raider Nation. That was my conversation, part two of my conversation with Evan Sivery, host of the Locked On Colts. Hopefully that gives you a better idea of what to expect. I know it's so difficult trying to figure out exactly who's going to be out there with all these COVID issues going on. And, man, I'll be so glad when we can stop talking about COVID, and how it's impacted each and every game. Because no matter what the NFL does, no matter what the NFLPA does, there's somehow that's going to impact every single game going down the stretch, and somehow it's going to impact games that mean a whole lot, like this one upcoming on Sunday with the Colts. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Tomorrow on the show, of course, we'll have the keys to victory, and I'll tell you right now, I have no problem saying, I think that the Raiders are going to win this game, and it's not going to be something pretty. I think it's going to be something more of like a hang around, and at the end, they find a way to win, either a Daniel Carlson field goal, or maybe Derek Carr leads a touchdown drive, even maybe a come from behind one. I think it's going to be a close game that the Raiders are going to find a way to win and then make that Week 18 game against the Chargers at Allegiant Stadium mean that much more. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a preview, like a tease to what's going to be coming up on tomorrow's show as we close out the week strong. You know how we do each and every Friday here on the Locked On Raiders podcast. But it should be interesting. I'm excited to see who's going to come back, who's going to return. Of course, Gus Bradley and Greg Olsen and others will meet with the media later on today. And then on Friday,
we'll actually hear from Rich Bisaccia, the final media session of the week before they head off to Indianapolis to take on the Colts Sunday morning. So, Raider Nation, that's all I got for you for today. Appreciate you checking out the show. Appreciate you hitting me up. If you're on Twitter, it's at your boy Q254. And if you just want to hit up the Locked On Raider Podcast voicemail line, you know you can do that as well. 707-654-4693. We'll have more calls. We'll have more texts coming up on tomorrow's show. We'll have the news and notes of the day. And, of course, as mentioned, the keys to victory. What the Raiders are going to have to do to get out of Indianapolis with a record of 9-7 and make that final game at Allegiant Stadium mean everything. We'll do all that as we close out the week here on the Locked On Raiders podcast. So until then, Raider Nation, stay safe. Take care of your family. Love on your family. Do what you do. And most importantly, as always, just win, baby.